Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 58 of the Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis here with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan. How are you?
I'm great because we have our follow-up to last week's episode about personality types, and I'm really excited to actually do the reveal this week.
Reveal. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Drum roll.
So if you missed us last week, we talked about personality tests and personality types. So specifically, we talked about Myers-Briggs and Enneagram, and we are going to reveal the results of our tests, and hopefully some of you listening along took those tests as well. We're going to talk more about what it all means.
Yep. Okay. So we're going to start with Myers-Briggs, right?
Let's just launch right in. You have you said you've taken this test many times and always.
Many times.
So give us the result. What is it? Drum roll.
I am an ENFP. I am, and if you go to 16personalities.com, which I recommend because they have cute little personality avatar types, that is the campaigner.
Okay.
It is, let me see. So I guess, should I go through the letters and what those
ones
mean?
Go letter by letter.
So letter by letter, it would be, I am extroverted. Okay. I am intuitive. Okay. I am feeling and I am perceiving. So, it would be as opposed to being introverted, intuitive versus, I always screw this
sensing.
Up.
Sensing,
uh-huh. Feeling versus
thinking
and perceiving versus judging. Mm-hmm. So, I'll read a little bit from this and then I'll tell you why I think this has never changed. Although I do think it's interesting that you get yours different a lot. And I wonder sometimes if that's because you're like, maybe you're getting into it and a little bit of your contrarian nature comes out you doubt your original results. Although I've tried to skew mine before and I've never been able to.
Yeah. And we'll get into that too, because I also have a theory. It's the way some questions are worded.
That's
specifically
true.
A specific category of questions that have to do with kind of empathy and other people, worrying about other people's feelings. I think there's a little crisscross there where I.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue. Yeah.
Okay. I'll read the first paragraph because this is the one, this is like what I think of as the fluff paragraph that totally just makes you feel great about yourself. And then when you dig in a little bit further, you're like, oh, okay. So the campaigner personality is a true free spirit. They're often the life of the party, but unlike types in the explorer role group and 16 personality also kind of like takes the four types and puts them into groups of four and like further subtypes them, which I think is interesting. Anyway, unlike those other types, campaigners are less interested in the sheer excitement of and pleasure of the moment they are in than enjoying the social and emotional connections they make with others. I believe that's true for myself. Charming, independent, energetic, and compassionate. They are awesome. And the 7% of the population that they comprise can certainly be felt in any crowd. Okay, that all sounds great, right?
Yeah.
Yay.
Happy Megan.
Let's go to weaknesses, shall we? Then they gave me some strengths too. But like my weaknesses would be poor practical skills, finds it difficult to focus, overthinks things, gets stressed easily, highly emotional, independent to a fault. All absolutely true. So there's always two sides of every coin. And that first little paragraph that makes you feel so good about yourself, you know, that it's just one part of the story. So
interesting. And you've taken different types of tests. Have you come across different descriptions that, I mean, cause so much of this is in how it's contextualized for us, right? Like you said, like, and that's, I think there's a lot of different stuff, or is it pretty consistent across the board with the way ENFPs are?
I have to say, I really like, maybe people are just doing a better job with these descriptions. I want to say, like, the first few times I took Myers-Briggs test, it would say things like, it would refer to me as life of the party. I never really saw myself that way. I definitely think within a very small party, I could be the life of it.
I think you're the life of a party personality, though, just as an outside. I mean, I definitely think you have really, like, in a good way, you have really like generous energy when you're in a group of people, meaning like you bring up the energy of a room, not the opposite. I'm not just trying to like pat you on the back, but
thanks,
I'm
so just, you can keep I'm, going.
I'm just concurring. Yeah. I think life of a party doesn't have to be like the girl, like
with a lampshade on her head dancing on a table. Not like I've never been that person either, but that's not
probably been times when you are also that life of a party, but I also think it has to do with like energy contribution and you definitely bring, and I have other like close people in my life. I pair well with people like that. My high school best friend, Sarah, is, I think, has so many parallels to you. We've talked about how some of our besties are like, you know, similar to you versus me, whatever. But same thing, like always so fun to go somewhere with her because it was like bringing a party. And it doesn't, you don't mean that literally, like it, like the lampshade on your head. It's just bringing somebody who brings in energy into a room. So I would say you are the life of a party.
Well, thank you. And I think as you're describing that, I think where one way I kind of express that or one place I excel in that kind of situation is – I'm not the life of like the whole party. If there's 400 people in a room, I'm not really interested in most of them, but I could be the person in my little group who gets everyone like up on their feet.
That corner where everyone looks over and be like, whoa, those people are having a lot of fun.
Exactly. Yes. So yeah, it is a little bit different way of looking at it. And I think the tests now in these results, I think that they've just really upped their game. A lot of these sites on giving really in-depth, analyses that kind of go beyond that superficial, like, well, you're an extrovert, so, you know, you're crazy all the time, and you're intuitive, so you're just like always going with your gut feeling, and that's true, but I mean, there's more to it than that. So,
right.
So I don't know. I want to hear about yours and what it's revealed.
Okay, I'm going to reveal mine in a second, but I have one more follow up question.
Sure.
Have you come across, because you've been paying attention to this longer than I have? Have you met or come across or bonded with other ENFPs where you've really said, last week's episode, I kind of poo-pooed this, how it sometimes feels like this false sorority where you're like, oh my gosh, me too. But have you been close to other ENFPs or come across them in your life where there really are some true fundamental similarities?
I have, off the top of my head, I can think of one of my very good friends. Now, I haven't had all of my good friends take these tests, so I don't know for sure.
You don't just keep them in your pocket.
Like. Yeah, exactly. I only do that at the Beyond Retreat. But I have maybe one friend right now who is an ENFP, and it's interesting. She might be my only ENFP friend, which is weird, isn't it? But maybe not. Like, maybe there's a reason I'm more drawn to, generally, people like you or Jenna, who I think may have the same type in both.
Letters as me. I know Jenna and I are the same Enneagram.
Same Enneagram. And the funny thing is when we both took Myers-Briggs at the same time, this test, and she came up at ENFP, and then she took it like two more times at different tests and came up both. And then at first I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't think Lisa and I are really that much alike. And I told my husband, he's like, no, you guys are totally the same. Like, I didn't see it, but he saw it, you know? So I think, I don't know. Like, I don't feel like it's, to me, it's actually more interesting when I run into people who are that opposite side, and I can see why I'm drawn to that person because they're much like somebody else, like you or, you know, somebody else in my life who's also that other type.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, totally.
And maybe that's one of those things where, like, ENFPs, maybe it's hard to have two life of the parties in the same party. I don't know.
Right.
No.
So true. All right. I'm about to pull up mine.
All right.
You ready?
I can't wait.
Okay. So I'm going to use the results from 16 personalities because I loved their test. That's the one you used. And also I do love the way they break it down into some other traits that aren't just the four letters. And so I think that might be a little bit more accurate for me. But I tested ISFJ, which is the defender personality. So that's introverted, sensing, feeling, judging. Now, I mentioned last week that it's the middle two letters where I seem to have, like, I've tested differently. So I have also tested ISTJ recently on a legit test. And then I self-diagnosed myself a few years ago as INTJ. That I think we can set that one aside because I didn't take the test.
And it's never happened for you in any other circumstance.
Also, INTJs are, there was once one of those, like, if Harry Potter characters were Myers-Briggs, you know how if you see those,
yes,
like, and Downton Abbey. So there were two. So INTJs God love you all, because they are a great personality, but they are either Snape or O'Brien.
I was going to say, Snape, I remember that one, and yeah. I was thinking O'Brien would be the next character that you would want to be.
I was really indignant about that, and it turns out I never actually tested INTJ, and INTJs are often really brilliant, really cool people, but in literature and
television, they don't fare so well.
All right, yeah. So back to ISFP.
I actually think John is an INTJ, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'll have to look that one up in a minute, but.
Right. So sensing versus intuition and feeling versus thinking is where I, when you look at that continuum of how extreme did I score, depending on the test, that is where I have tested differently. I still, when I think about it logically, that's funny that I just said that. I think I'm more of a thinker than a feeler, but I have tested with that F here. So we're going to go with it. I'll read the paragraph. So the ISFJ personality type is quite unique, as many of their qualities defy the definition of their individual traits. Though possessing the feeling trait, ISFJs have excellent analytical abilities. Though introverted, they have well-developed people skills and robust social relationships. And though they are a judging type, ISFJs are often receptive to change and new ideas. As with so many things, people with the ISFJ personality type are more than the sum of their parts, and it is the way they use these strengths that defines who they are. So that's the happy part. So it does say that it's a large proportion of the population, nearly 13%. Combining the best of tradition and the desire to do good, ISFJs are found in lines of work with a sense of history behind them, such as medicine, academics, and charitable social work. I don't know. Mm. See, I just feel like none of this really sounds totally like me. But, okay, so I'm going to read one more little bit. The challenge for ISFJs is ensuring that what they do is noticed. That's true.
That's totally true for you.
Yeah, totally true. Okay. They have a tendency to underplay their accomplishments, and while their kindness is often respected, more cynical and selfish people are likely to take advantage of ISFJ's dedication and humbleness by pushing work onto them and then taking the credit.
Totally me.
ISFJs need to know when to say no and stand up for themselves if they're to maintain their confidence and enthusiasm. Yeah, see, I don't know.
A little part of that sounded like you, but most of it really didn't sound like you.
But okay, so this part, naturally social and odd quality for introverts, ISFJs utilize excellent memories not to retain data and trivia, but to remember people and details about their lives. When it comes to gift giving, ISFJs have no equal, using their imagination and natural sensitivity to express their generosity. I don't know. I just feel like all of this is like 30% me.
What was the other one that you tested as?
ISTJ, which I have up here.
Oh, okay.
I'll read this really quick. ISTJs,
I don't know about this one.
ISTJs often called interest inspectors. They have a keen sense of right and wrong, especially in their area of interest and or responsibility. That's totally me. They are noted for devotion to duty. Punctuality is a watchword of the ISTJ. The secretary, clerk, or businesswoman by whom others set their clocks is likely to be an ISTJ. So that sounds more like me to me.
Actually, I think this is Jenna. I'm reading this. I think this is what she got.
The ISTJ?
Yeah.
So I switched over to another site in reading that because that's what I had up on my browser. But I'm very curious, listeners, if others have tested differently, especially in either of these. So what's wrong with me, people? Why can't I test the same?
Well, and they're alike enough.
Uh-huh.
I wonder almost if you're like going in and looking at this, I'm not going to say like a job, but like, so taking it so seriously.
Well, that is my number one personality trait.
That you have a hard time then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. So it's interesting to me. Like, I feel like now I've kind of gotten in the routine where I'm going to take it and I'm okay with where I am, and I'm not really that worried about it anymore. And I'm not really coming at it with a super objective eye anymore.
Right.
Where maybe if I was more like a type like you, I would be wavering because I'd be less satisfied with my type. I don't know.
It's interesting. I know that there are a lot of questions in both tests I took. There's a lot of questions, and this must be, I'm trying to think of which pair of letters they would be going for. But I think it would be thinking or feeling, the T and the F, which makes sense because that's the one I've kind of flip-flopped on. Where there's questions about when you are, I mean, they word the questions all different ways, but there's questions about is tact more important than being right? Or do you look for a solution or a compromise where everyone's happy and create harmony? And I feel like that's a big situational if for me. I do have a strong sense, like, of right and wrong, and I can be a little righteous in my head. But I think I'm also fairly diplomatic. And in most cases, I am able to, you know, strive for harmony or let it go if I don't need to be right this time. Does that make sense? So there's like...
Yeah, but can't you just choose that middle one that isn't either?
I do sometimes.
Oh, okay.
And then, yeah. Yeah, and then in fact, a lot of my... I have quite a few of those neutral or... Yeah. Or just to the either side of neutral. It's interesting. Yeah.
I don't know. Funny. I have a lot that are just to the side one. I don't have a lot of totally neutral ones. I have a lot of answers that are just to one or to the left, you know, one mm-hmm. to the right or left, and a lot that are in extremes, but not a lot in the middle.
Yeah, that's funny.
So
I'm very curious if our listeners are ISTJs or I already forgot my types. ISTJ and ISFJ.
And I looked at John's, and I think he's actually an INTP. I just looked at him again.
Okay.
Which is, hold on, I'm going to look at it again because I think it's fun and relevant. The logician.
Yeah.
I also wanted to quickly mention that I just looked at the Downton Abbey type, and I am Anna, and I am not happy about that because she is the worst. I'd rather be O'Brien than Anna. I mean, I liked her at first. You know, I liked her for like two seasons.
I think their storyline. I got very tired of their storyline.
It just,
but I
mean, every
person.
Ugh, I don't know. She was so whiny. No, Daisy's the worst. Daisy's actually the actual worst. But I just, by the end, I was like, okay, Anna, you can just be happy. Just be happy, Anna.
I know. I guess I blamed that more on the writing. Like, I felt like the writers just kept screwing over.
I mean, she is a fictional character. So no matter what, we can blame the writing, right? It's not like there's actually an Anna out there who's, you know, like just at the mercy of the writers. So I don't know.
She is, and she's an ENFP, clearly.
Exactly.
That's so funny. Oh my gosh. Okay, well, solve my problem, listeners, if you're a Myers-Briggs expert, or if you have a favorite test that you think, or a favorite diagnostic tool, then you can help me solve my conundrum. I'm just going to probably go back and take like 8 more tests after this.
I did want to say that I had several of my kids take ENFP tests or ENFP, Myers-Briggs tests.
It all revolves around you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's all about me, and I'm going to take all the credit. And it's really hard to tell with kids because I think they're just not terribly self-aware yet. You know, and so they don't know what they would do in any given situation. I mean, when I was 10 years old, did I know whether I was more a person who would – go to the edges of the room or to the middle? I just feel like those are things you realize about yourself as you get older. But I will say, Owen and Jacob both got ENTPs, which are the debater. Follow the path of the unsafe, independent thinker. The ENT personality type is the ultimate devil's advocate, thriving in the process of shredding arguments and beliefs and letting the ribbons drift in the wind. It is so true for both of them. So although Jacob didn't really believe it was true because he's a debater and he doesn't believe in it. You know what I mean? Like he had to find the other side.
Right.
It was very true for them. So I think it's worth having them do it, even if you don't completely agree with the results, having your kids take the test. And that's another reason I like the one at 16 personalities. I swear I'm not getting paid by them, but it's really cute. And like, it's fun for the kids to do it. It's you know, it's
easy interface.
It's engaging. And... Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. Yeah. Well, should we move on to Enneagram?
We should.
All right. Well, just in case you missed last week's episode, in which case you're probably just completely lost right now, we explained the Enneagram, which is, I think, a little lesser known personality test, and it comes up with a number for you. So we'll talk about our numbers. And there are 9, according to this method, there's 9 different personality types. And do you want to go ahead and reveal your number and tell us about it?
I am a 2. I am the helper. When I took the test, I wanted to be 7, the enthusiast, and took it like 4 times because I was really convinced that it was wrong and I was going to get the enthusiast. And as we talked about last week, I'll just really briefly sum this up again. I think I like the Enneagram because I think it goes a little deeper than Myers-Briggs, and that it really goes to like your basic human self. Like what is the essence of who you are, what you fear, and what motivates you. And basically everything else can kind of grow out of that. So in mine, the basic fear is of being unwanted or unworthy of being loved. And I read that. I was like, ugh, it sounds so needy. It really just sounds really needy. And then the basic desire is to feel loved. And I am an Enneagram with the 2 with a 3 wing, which makes me the hostess. So that means, as we talked about briefly last week, it also kind of like then ties you more closely to the number on either side. So right. If I'm a two, I could be a two that leans more toward one, or I could be a two that leans more toward three, and I'm a right. two that leans more toward three.
Okay.
But basically, at its essence, what this means is that I feel really good when I am being helpful to other people, or when other people, you know, appreciate and love me. And if they don't, then I don't feel good. And then I'll start to like spiral out of control. I mean, like, it's kind of funny reading the descriptions of like the really healthy version of a two is basically like, you know, earth mother,
nurturer,
yeah. you know, unselfish, everyone likes them, blah, blah, blah. And then if you get down further into the unhealthy, I'll use right. just a few of the words that they use
yeah,
here. Manipulative, self-serving, domineering, and coercive. Feels entitled to get anything they want from others, the repayment of old debts, money, and sexual favors. And then at the very worst part, you basically become bitterly resentful and angry and become a histrionic personality. So that's
I
no
know,
good.
If you go to the unhealthy level in each of these types,
it's hilarious.
It almost
actually.
Always leads to death and destruction.
It
like
does.
Either suicide or homicide or
yes.
institutionalization.
Yeah, I think John's, and he's an eight. I think his actually said he'd become like a domineering dictator or something if left unchecked. Now, the good news is I feel like I generally fall someplace in the healthy or average levels. Like, I think I've generally speaking like a three or a four. Sometimes maybe I'm like, and when I say three or four, I don't mean, it gets a little confusing. Like, not the Enneagram number, but your, like, health level within number.
Yeah.
I think I'm, you know, kind of, like, at the top end of average most of the time. Now, I will say, when I was way more unhappy as a mom when the kids were really little, I was more toward, like, the unhealthy, and I was definitely a martyr, and I was very codependent and possessive and self-sacrificing in the way no one wants to be thought of as self-sacrificing, you know, the very, like, you know, hysterical and doing it for
right.
attention kind of thing. That right. I definitely have those tendencies, and it was very uncomfortable reading that about myself.
Right.
Instead
right.
of what I thought of as, oh, the enthusiast, they're this energetic person who's just out there like discovering new stuff, and that sounded great to me, and that is not at my very essence what motivates me. You know, it's
right.
not who I am. So
right.
I don't know. Yeah, it was revealing for sure. I wrote a blog post about it that we can link
yes,
to.
Yes, we'll definitely link to that. And I think, like you mentioned this in last week's episode, that it's almost an indicator of a well-done test or a well-done system if you keep getting the same result and it's not even the one you really want.
Right.
Because, you know, then you know something's at work there that, it is a well-designed set of questions. So, all right, well, do you want to know mine?
Yeah, of course. I already know yours, but
I know
everybody
know.
Else wants to know yours.
So I am a one. And the one is called the reformer, the rational, idealistic type, principled, purposeful, self-controlled, and perfectionistic. So I'll just read a couple sentences. Ones are conscientious and ethical with a strong sense of right and wrong. They are teachers, crusaders, and advocates for change, always striving to improve things but afraid of making a mistake. Well organized, orderly, and fastidious, they try to maintain high standards but can slip into being critical and perfectionistic. They typically have problems with resentment and impatience. At their best, they are wise, discerning, realistic, and noble, can be morally heroic.
You are a hero, Sarah.
I am a hero who tends toward controlling perfectionism. I am when it comes to that wing where I lean one way or the other, I lean toward the two, which is the helper. I think there's a lot in the description of the one that is right on for me, much more so than the Myers-Briggs descriptions. The one, I think the one thing that was helpful for me just philosophically is I've always had trouble understanding my brand of what you'd call being a perfectionist or an achiever. And in Enneagram, the achiever is actually a different type, a type three, because I was on paper an achiever in high school and college academically and, you know, getting good grades, doing things right, going through all. But I never had what I perceived from others as like, I was never doing it for recognition or to be like on a list, like, you know, honor roll or to be in a club. In fact, I opted out of a lot of those things to the frustration of people around me. I'd be like, yeah, I know. I don't care about actually like wearing that thing around my neck at graduation. It doesn't mean anything to me. So this was a helpful distinction between, like, the reformer is sort of doing things right for the sake of doing them right, or doing them well for the sake of doing them well, whereas an achiever is more, and it's not right, it's not good or bad, but an achiever is, it is a little bit more about the achievement. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, totally. Well, read the basic fear and desire, because I think that also kind of boils down.
Okay.
Right?
So basic fear is of being corrupt or evil or defective. And the basic desire is to be good, to have integrity, to be balanced.
So it's really more about yourself and
your own
personal best.
Exactly. And that's always how I felt about achievement. And it was a little confusing for me, I would say, in like high school and college, being around a lot of high achievers, and in one way being very driven as I was, but also not feeling, I'm not competitive at all. So not feeling that achievement drive or competitive drive, but yet having these sort of quite rigid perfectionistic standards on the other hand. So that was a good, like, I would say that this particular distinction through Enneagram was helpful for me.
And here's another thing, like, about, you know, we mentioned this in the last episode, 57, but I thought it was fascinating when we all did the Enneagram at the Beyond Retreat last October. Mm-hmm. October.
Yeah.
And I think maybe 7 or 8 people took it, and almost everyone was either a 1 or a 2.
Yeah.
And I think there may have been like I don't even think there was a 3 in the room. There might have been like a 9. I mean, there was somebody else who was like kind of close to one of them.
Or a 5. I forget what the 5
Maybe it was a 5.
Yeah.
I thought it was fascinating because, I mean, you can see how certain people are drawn to certain people. And so, like, your college best friend was a 2.
Mm-hmm.
Was an Allison a 2?
Yeah, she was a 2. I think she was a borderline between a 2 and a 3, which was unusual. But yes, she was a 2.
Yeah. And then Jenna was there, and Jenna was a 1.
Yep.
Which totally made sense. Like, and then you can kind of see how certain people are really attracted to certain people, not necessarily just like themselves, but maybe different in the same way.
Yep.
So I would be fascinated to hear, because, you know, the people who came to Beyond Retreat, besides, you know, your friend and my friend, were also people who'd read the blog for a long time and maybe identified with one or the other of us a lot.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
There were a lot of ones there, and ones being, they strive for improvement all the time, which is, like I said, different than necessarily striving for achievement, but to be better. So to find them all collected at a retreat that's designed for, you know, feeling better about where you're headed with your life is not a surprise, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, you almost collected ones in that way.
It would have been interesting to go back and see and do that test at the very beginning, because I would have liked to have seen how the different, like, the people who were twos in the room, did they take a different role during facilitated discussions, for example? Because I did lead discussions, but I didn't talk the whole time. Like, it was very much a group, like, group conversations, and everybody was kind of chiming in to help and stuff like that. And I would like now to be able to go back and really remember. Maybe this year we'll do that. It's where we really pay attention to, like, how do the twos interact with everybody? Like, how do the ones interact and other numbers that are going to, cause it's not like if you're a 2 or a 1, you can't come. Obviously there were other people there and they had a very good time, but it's just interesting to see people gathered in a room and find out the similarities and differences, I guess.
Right. No,
how do we all end up there?
I agree. Okay. I want to read a couple other things about ones, and then I'll talk about the healthy and not healthy, but this paragraph I feel like is kind of me. Although ones have a strong sense of purpose, they also typically feel they have to justify their actions to themselves and often to others as well. This orientation causes ones to spend a lot of time thinking about the consequences of their actions, as well as how to keep from acting contrary to their convictions. Because of this, ones often persuade themselves that they are head types, rationalists who proceed only on logic and objective truth. But the real picture is somewhat different. Ones are actually activists who are searching for an acceptable rationale for what they feel they must do. They are people of instinct and passion who use convictions and judgments to control and direct themselves and their actions. So that's really interesting with regard to my schizophrenic Myers-Briggs results, because a lot of the Myers-Briggs confusion is around, like, instinct versus logic, that kind of, you know, whatever, those opposing. And so I think that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me too that and I don't want to, like, interrupt you when you're talking about this.
No, go ahead.
I meant to go back to the part about the 2 that I did not find flattering, that I did not like about myself when I read it. So when I first started reading this, it was like the first paragraph is, when 2s are healthy and in balance, they are loving, helpful, generous, and considerate. People are drawn to them like bees to honey. Healthy twos warm others in the glow of their hearts. I was like, wow, I'm great. And then I scrolled down. However, twos' inner development may be limited by their shadow side, pride, self-deception, the tendency to become over-involved in the lives of others, the tendency to manipulate others to get their own emotional needs met. Transformational work entails going into dark places in ourselves, and this very much goes against the grain of the two, which prefers to see itself in only the most positive, glowing terms. I was like, that makes me sound terrible, like the worst person ever. But it's true. I mean, those are all things that you can... I guess what I really kind of came away with this is we're just all our own. We're all just people.
Yeah.
And we all have certain upsides and we have things that we struggle with and we have pitfalls and traps that we can fall into. And it's so helpful to me to even just have this in my mind. Like, mm-hmm. Because it helps me, like, you know, check my motivation. Am I doing something because I really want to mm-hmm. do it? Or am I doing it because I think that the people I do it for or around will think of me a certain way mm-hmm. or that I can now continue to think of myself in a positive, glowing term because I've done this thing? I just think it's really – or when I'm, like, angry about something, if I get upset because I don't feel appreciated or I don't feel like the effort I put in was noticed, I mean, was it even – what I did even valuable to anyone else? Did I actually do it for other people? You know, or did I do it for myself? It's just a really, I don't know. I think it's really helpful to kind of examine your motivations that way and your motives. And so this is why I like these tests. It's not because I think now I am this type and that's it. And I to excuse everything I've ever done with it. It's more like, why do I do the things I do? And then how do I help that keep me from doing things that, you know, for the wrong reasons or that aren't healthy for me or for the people around me?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And going back to something we've said a few times already, that we picked Myers-Briggs and Enneagram because it's a fun rabbit hole to fall down. But I think all of this can be, it's like I said before, it's a conversation starter. It's just a framework to kind of start to poke around and see why we are the way we are and if we want to grow. So I think it's interesting. I am curious about, since we only talked about ones and twos, this website is enneagraminstitute.com, and you mentioned if listeners haven't taken their Enneagram test already and want to, that one is, oh shoot, I lost it. We'll link to it in the show notes, but where the test is.
Eclecticenergies.com, yes, that's very.
Is where you can take the test, and then these Enneagram Institute descriptions of the personalities. But did you, so Jenna's a two,
Jenna's a one.
Oh, I mean a one. I'm sorry. Yeah. You're a two, but have you done it much looking at the other types?
John is an eight. Okay. He is the challenger. Hold on. I'm going to look him up really quick.
I'll just read him while you're looking. So
he's self-confident, strong, assertive, protective, resourceful, straight talking, and decisive, but can also be egocentric and domineering. Eights feel they must control their environment, especially people, sometimes becoming confrontational and intimidating. And that's all very true. I mean, his someplace in here, it talks about how he could be a hero, which always cracks me up. I don't know where it is. I mean, the descriptions are very long. What's funny is I've looked at a few of like John's personality types and mine compared, and we don't seem on paper very compatible.
Uh-huh.
In real life, we are. And I think some of that's just because, probably because of my particular combination of two and ENFP. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty accepting. Like I kind of can see where someone is and then sort of mold myself to work with mm-hmm. that. And
mm-hmm. You're flexible.
I'm flexible. Yeah. I don't think his personality type is very flexible. So you'd really have to have someone who was very flexible to make it work, I think. Mm-hmm. Unless they were just matched so perfectly in every other way that they would almost operate completely autonomously, you know?
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he's had to learn how to deal with a lot of my personality quirks, which I think can be very annoying for him because I'm very emotionally driven and I'm not logical all the time. And, I can be impulsive and just stuff like that. Like he doesn't get,
right.
And I can be a little needy or a lot needy. So, you know, he's had to really kind of, and to his credit, like he's really gone above and beyond sort of the typical eight or the typical I think it's INTJ. I keep forgetting INTP.
Okay.
To kind of meet me where I'm at. So, yeah. I don't know. I haven't had a lot of people come up. I'm looking at the other numbers now.
Yeah. Three is the achiever. Four is the individualist. 5.
I've got a good friend who's a 9, and that makes total sense to me. And
I think Brian is a 9, but I don't, again, I like to pre-diagnose.
Right.
And I don't think that's always right. So I remember telling him to take the test, and I don't know if he ever did. I will follow up and report back. I think he's a 9, but I'm not sure about that.
My brother is also a 1, by the way, and this is interesting. So Jenna's a 1, and my brother is a 1. And I read someplace on this website you can look at your type as matched with someone else's
right when
type.
You get your results. You can, match it up with your partner's type and see how it works.
Okay, so the hilarious thing was, I mean, we were reading this one night at our house and cracking up. So it's basically like the two of them get a lot of pleasure in just kind of being righteous and judgy together. And they were like, yep. I mean, not like in a, you know, not in a, I don't know, like not in a mean way. I just think that they are, as a couple, like they have this really sort of quiet and intense sense of rightness about their choices in life because it's two of them. It's not like one of them who's trying to be the moral center for the family and then you've got this other one doing whatever that you kind of have to keep pulling in. They're both in that same place.
Right.
So that gives them like a lot of strength in that way, which can also kind of make them a little bit of an island at times, but it works because they don't care. You know, I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting.
It's really interesting.
What about you? Do you
have other Brian's either a peacemaker or maybe an enthusiast, the 7.
Okay.
But yeah, I will report back.
Hold on one second. I'm looking right now because I want to just read a little bit about type 2 and type 8, which is me and John. So, and this is interesting stuff I wouldn't have thought about. So these two types are more alike than they might appear. They're both action-oriented and want to have a personal impact on their environment. Both can be sentimental and deeply feeling. Yeah. Both can play the roles of provider, protector, caretaker, and nurturer while devoiding or even denying their own needs. But then it kind of, then after that, it kind of goes off into what isn't the same, right? So, yeah, I don't know. Everybody's got trouble spots and places where they connect really well. So I guess it's just your job to like work with it, what you got.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask you to kind of like zoom out a little bit here. Do you think, knowing whether it's Myers-Briggs or your Enneagram type, are there any areas of motherhood or parenting where you feel like you've had to learn as an ENFP or as a 2 to compensate, or that it's been a little bit of a struggle? We've talked about, kids climbing all over you and feeling like that was quite enough touch for the day or whatever. But I'm thinking of things like, for me as a 1, if my central need is to improve things, make things better, or have them be fundamentally good, in air quotes, whatever that means, that's a lot of letting go of control when it comes to young children, both whether it's letting go of control of having a clean house, which is less, I mean, that's to me at like surface level, but also letting go of control that I actually can make my children become who I want them to be. Right. That like, something to be reformed as a reformer. That's the drive, right. Is to improve something. And when little tiny kids are in your care all the time, it's easy to feel like you can make them what you want them to be, whether it's well behaved or dress a certain way. And I think parenting is constantly letting go of that, you know, that control. So maybe as a 1, that's harder for me, I'm thinking.
So I think that yes, that's all true for me, except on the opposite side. So for me, it's like, because I don't typically try to control other people, and I typically have tried to let everybody figure things out for themselves and become their own people and just kind of help or nurture them through that. Maybe there's been more chaos than there should be at times. Maybe I haven't set rules as firmly as I could, for sure. I think one definite challenge that I'm seeing now as the kids get older is because I'm a 2 and John's an 8, it's very easy for us to fall into like good cop, bad cop. Or like he's the mean one. I'm the one who'll say yes, come to mom, because dad said no, but like try to. And not that this is new; they've been trying to work that on us for years. But as they move toward teenagerdom, you know, and then we have 2 teens, I don't want to be the mom who's like quietly like undermining the dad because, you know, everyone can sees him as like the authoritarian, and everyone sees me as the nice one. At the same time, I do think that sometimes he can be a little overly authoritarian. And I'm reading this description of 2s and 8s, and here's one thing where it says, okay, Even average eights tend to become proud of their resolutely unsentimental way of dealing with people and situations, while average twos become highly attached to people and overly solicitous about their needs. So John will look at a situation and be like, this is how it should be. Why can't they get it together? Like, why can't these, like, this is what's the right thing. The kids need to fall in line. And I definitely tend to be more on the side of like, but here's the underlying situation we're not taking into account, or here's the need, the special need this child has, or whatever it is. And it can be really hard for us to meet in the middle. And it's not necessarily me directly with the kid. It's more like how the two of us figure out how to co-parent through those very different lenses. And so, I would say right now, that's probably the bigger challenge. I think I've kind of figured out, because I am really nurturing. I guess I've just kind of figured out this is my style, and for better or for worse, I'm not the most organized. I'm not the most structured. I'm not necessarily requiring the best of my kids at all time. I could do more, but I'm not. I am who I am, right? But I don't want that to become a conflict point in the family, or for John to be like seen as mean dad and I'm nice mom or whatever. And I've seen that in go very downhill in older parents, like people I know who are adults whose parents kind of kept that role. And I think it could just become really messy as, you know, as kids get older and their needs become like large sums of money kinds of needs. And I don't want to be the mom who's busting out my checkbook to like cover up for the fact that dad said I should do this on my own or whatever. I could definitely see it going that way if we're not careful. So that's something that I'm really focused on. I don't know, that was a long-winded way of saying,
yeah, is exactly right. Because we can self-assess and self-diagnose till the cows come home, but ultimately life is about relationships and parenting is about relationships. So I think that's where, no matter what system you use, it's really interesting to figure out how to work with the people in your house, your partner, your kids, because no woman is a two island.
Nope.
That is true. Oh, well, this has been really fun. Covered it all, do you think? I'm picturing like two camps of listeners, the people who totally love this stuff and are like shouting at us and will write us long emails about their types and all of that. And then the rest who are like, whoa.
They're like, what was this?
What just happened?
Well, don't worry. Next week we'll be back to something resembling normal. But
yes.
I would if you listened to this episode and hated it, I would love to find out your type. I would love to know, like, which types totally thought that was dumb. That was a waste of my time. It would just be really interesting, you know?
Totally.
Because I just have a feeling it's going to be people that fall into certain camps who find value in this sort of thing, and then people who fall into other camps won't. And it just makes sense. We're all different, and we all like different things. So,
agreed. Yeah. I definitely want people who didn't know about Enneagram but do like this kind of stuff to definitely go take your Enneagram, because I think it's really interesting.
I personally got more out of my Enneagram than Myers-Briggs. I find Myers-Briggs fun and pretty insightful, but I actually was like deeply sort of moved by the Enneagram, honestly, and that's something that was different for me. So
is it newer? Like, is it newer on the scene, or did you just
think it's a little more I think it's a little more woo-woo. And so I just think it kind of is under the radar a little bit. I don't know the history. I'm sure we could find out. Well, let's see. Let me see if I can find it really quickly. No, it doesn't. It's not.
We will live explain it to you.
Okay. So, 97. It hasn't been around as nearly as long as Myers-Briggs, but it's still, I mean, that's a decent amount of time.
Small doses.
It just reads a little more new age. So I wonder if it's just taking a little more time to really build up steam.
That makes sense. Well, again, to find everything we talked about, go to themomhour.com. This was episode 58, and I'll just link to all the same resources from episode 57. So wherever you land, you'll get all the tests and things we've mentioned. And then leave us a comment while you're there, or send us an email to hello@themomhour.com. And diagnose me, Myers-Briggs fans. Or give me a test that will be definitive.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we get back, next time we are talking with you guys, I'll be able to tell you all about my trip to Yellowstone with the whole family. Yeah,
so the giant family road trip.
Yeah.
I was blanking out on the Chevy Chase family vacation. Their last name I was going for.
Oh, it was Griswolds.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know if we'll have that much fun, but I'm looking forward to it.
Well, thanks, everybody. We will be back next week.
All right. See you then.